Welcome to VI Talk, sharing ideas, information and support.
First of all, good morning to everybody. Lovely to see so many people here. And I'd like to say a really big thank you to Joe and the rest of the VI Talk team for inviting me to be here this weekend. Even though they may be the first speaker, which is really nerve-wracking, I am here. And I'd like to say thank you to all of you who've come. I know a lot of people have come a really long way to be here. So it's lovely to see you all. I'm going to be talking about children's services. But before I do, I just want to say a couple of just general things about sight loss. I'm fully sighted, but the parent of a visually impaired, I was going to say child, but she's 18 now, a visually impaired young lady. And usually, I've also worked in the sight loss sector for about 10 years. Usually I find that, you know, I'm in the majority as a sighted person, and there's a few blind and partially sighted people around me. And even when you go to places like Sight Village, a lot of the people there are sighted. And it's quite interesting being in the minority, actually, and finding myself one of the very few sighted people. I don't know, are there any other sighted people? I think there's three of us in the room today. And because I was here last night as well, it's really made me look at things quite differently and look at myself and how I am as well. And it's really made me realise that actually sighted people can do really stupid things. And I don't mean the sort of normal stupid things that we all do, like I just left half the stuff I needed for my talk in my room twice, and I've actually run up to the hotel twice in the last 10 minutes. Because I went up there the first time, went to the loo, came back and realised that I hadn't actually picked up the things that I needed. But what I'm referring to more is the stupid things that sighted people do around blind people. It's really, really hit me this weekend. And, you know, if I get on a train, my husband puts me on a train, I stand at the window, wave, he waves, I wave. Actually, I don't want to be doing that. What I'd really like to do is find my seat, sit down, get my Mars bar and Diet Coke out, and get the book out. But it's kind of polite to wave. So you stand there and you think, oh, thank God, the train's gone round a bend, you can't see him anymore, I can go and sit down. Which is great. But of course, when I put my daughter on a train, she just goes and sits down in the seat, and I'm standing outside the train, waving into the train through the dark window. And she's completely ignoring me.
She can't see you.
She can't see me at all. And I'm signing in sign language, "I love you." And actually, the thing that stopped me doing that was that a man sitting opposite who actually scrawled a phone number on a piece of paper and held it up to the window. And I thought, oh, that's a bit cheeky. And then the train goes, and I'm standing there, and I'm waving away, and it just makes me realise how many incredibly stupid things that sighted people, and that's even sighted people who've brought up a visually impaired child who work in the sight loss sector, that we do. So first of all, I'd like to apologise for all the stupid things I've ever done, and will probably continue to do, so I'm sorry. Anyway. My job is that I run a Devon-based charity for families of blind and partially sighted children and also blind and partially sighted parents. We don't mean every parent who's blind and partially sighted, otherwise we'd have every elderly person who's blind sighted. We're talking about people who are raising, you know, children to adulthood who are blind and partially sighted. And we offer information, advice, support for families, from Devon, Cornwall, Dorset and Somerset. And as I've said, I'm also the parent of a visually impaired 18-year-old daughter and a fully sighted son, who's quite often more hard work, actually, than the visually impaired daughter. But he's a teenage boy, and you know what they could be like. I don't know about you lot, but I often feel that there seems to be two distinct groups of VI people, and do correct me if I'm wrong, but there seems to be people who've lost their sight either at birth, during childhood, or early adulthood. And then there's the people who lose their sight later on in life, and I mean much later on, when they get to, you know, their pensionable age, and they start to get the things like macular degeneration and the various diseases of older age that affect them. And they do seem, in the work I've done, to be very distinct. And I don't know if there's any areas where these two groups merge. I mean, you're all going to get older one day. Sorry to say that, but we all do. So, you know, even people who've lost their sight from birth or early childhood are one day going to become older blind people. And I presume then they'll merge with the people who who lose their sight later in life, maybe not. It's an interesting thing that I've often wondered about. They do seem to be very distinct at the moment. Anyway, I'm not going to talk to you the whole time because I've sat in so many lectures where people have talked and you don't get any time to kind of be involved or think things for yourself, really. So I'm going to get you to do some of the work for this session. I'm not doing it all, not after running up and down to the and for this, I need to split you into three or four groups where you can just kind of work together for a few minutes and discuss things. I will be asking questions, and there will be a little prize for the group that does the best.
Ooh.
Now, at the moment, we've got a very full table, top right. We've got a reasonably full table, bottom left. But there's only two people, Jenny, on your table. I'm wondering, would it be a good idea if Jenny and the young man sitting opposite Jenny move to this table so we have three tables to make it a little bit fairer?
Yep.
Because otherwise, I think they're going to get distinct disadvantage. And you don't want to miss out on those chocolates, you really don't. And then Jeff, you go over to the
cabinet.
That would be great.
And I could do it.
Yes.
How do you think, doggy? That's it. I'm going to put you opposite Justin. So there's the table there, and the chair is.
There's nothing that you need to read. There was a list. I do apologise. There was a short list which I was going to bring, but I actually fell and broke my wrist just before Christmas. I'm still in kind of wrist bit, so I'm not allowed to swear. I could do with a volunteer on each table just to record some, to record your answers. So I don't know I know there's a lady on this table who can record. Is there anyone who can write and record on the other two tables? Maybe Denise?
I could go.
Yeah, okay, that's great. So, and like I say, no braille in the answers because I am a guest and I can read it. And I'm your chief, I'm not alone.
Okay. I need a pen and paper then.
Yeah.
And I don't know the bottom table's got any paper in it as well.
Okay, everyone's ready. So, the first question I'm going to call you. Because I'm not very good with where things are, even as a sighted person. So I'm going to call you top right, yeah. And then we've got bottom left, and we've got bottom right. So, the first question I'd like to ask you, and to talk quietly so the other groups can't hear, is how many visually impaired people are there in the UK?
No help scribes.
No Googling. No Googling to do on your mobile phones.
What they won't know.
Yes.
I want you
off. No. Okay, so
I would say 5 or 6 times, but you know what?
We reckon around the 20 to 25 million.
20 to 25 million, that would be like nearly half the population.
No.
I'll say 5 or 6 thousand.
Maybe even
a little bit lower than that.
Ouch.
Mind you, the way some people...
You can wag all you want, you're not going to get far.
500.
I've only got a question about it. Is it including people that just wear glasses or the actual No,
if you just wear glasses, like I've got glasses for driving because I'm such a short sighted and that really corrects my vision, no.
So if you're registered visually impaired or blind, you want
Or if you've got an uncorrectable sight condition which can't be corrected by glasses, that's the normal distinction. So, Tracy,
what do you reckon?
500,000.
500,000?
500,000. So we've got 500,000, 5 million, and 1.2 million. The answer is actually just over 2 million. So actually, Denise's table are the closest of the 100,000.
The amount of dogs they've gone around this year.
If you think that there's actually just over 60 million people in the country, and just over 2 million people are blind, as in having uncorrectable sight loss. That's quite a lot. Part of the reason the numbers are so high is because of the ageing population, the number of people with macular degeneration and other conditions like that. So, that's great, thank you. So, the second question is, how many of those 2 million people, in terms of percentages, are under the age of 65?
How many things are in that one?
Computer.
The question is how many of these are blind?
I've got no idea.
Yeah.
70%, I would say.
Okay, so 40%. The percentage of those 2 million people are aged under 65. So we're starting a different order now. We'll start with Denise's table.
You said a third.
A third, okay. Yeah. And Tracy's table?
35%.
35%. And the table at the back?
25%.
25%. So we've got 33%, 35%, 25%. This is going to come as a real shock to you. Actually, the number is 5%. Only 5%, 95% of people with sight loss are over the age of 65. And I think that gives you a real idea of the number of people who are losing their sight as they reach their older years compared to the number of people who are born partially sighted or blind or lose their sight early on or during young adulthood. And actually, it's the gist of what I'm going to talk about, is that actually there are so few people of that age. And it's one of the reasons I personally think that services are sometimes not the best, because there are so few of you, and so few of them. So that's a bit of a shock. So we've got 5% of people who are actually under 65. So let me see, who was the closest to that?
25%, wasn't it? Who said that?
Who was 25%? You were 25%. Right, for you, you're doing really well. Right, so if anyone is good with maths, what that equates to is there are 100,000 people with visual impairment under the age of 65. Just 100,000, it's not a lot. And approximately, if you think about, say people live roughly to, well, they don't live to 100, but roughly, but approximately 25 of these people are age under 25. So, and they come into the category, the legal category now of children and young people is under 25, it's more to 25. The services for children and young people should go to 25. I say should, with big capital S. And that actually comes down to 25,000. There are 25,000 children and young people up to the age of 25 in this country with sight loss. My sighted son currently attends a big comprehensive school with 2,500 students, so that's one school. And it's pretty big, but it would only take 10 of those schools, and that would be the entire population of blind partially sighted children in the country. So they are few and far between.
What's that in relation to, say, when I was a child 40 years ago, of people under 25?
I think the percentage is lower because more people are aging and staying alive. When they're, you know, more people are growing older. I'm also because of the baby boom of the 60s, more people are becoming older. Because of all the smoking that happened up to about the 80s and 90s, more people are developing things to do with smoking. There's a far higher rate of diabetes, which is called retinopathy. So there are more people generally with CIPRS, but there are also more children with CIPRS because more children are surviving premature births. And one of the which is fantastic, but one of the downsides of a premature birth is that you can have conditions such as retinopathy and prematurity and other general CIPRS conditions.
Yeah, I was born prematurely. I was born the 15th of August. I should have been born in October.
Oh, good grief. Yeah. Good grief. You're in the wrong part of being in the wrong school year. So how much did you weigh?
A bag of sugar.
Oh, well, you've done very well, because we're not putting a bag of sugar now.
This is like the most common way for someone to, for that premature birth, I can't never say it, renal detachment, that's what I was called it. But because I was the same, and I was meant to be born in July, I was born in April, and I only weighed like just a pound.
Yeah.
So it's most common. I know a few other people have gone through the similar process as well.
And
so.
it can also, premature babies can also have bleeds on the brain, which cause cortical vision impairment. There's lots of reasons why premature children do become blind. But at the same time, it's great that they survive, because, you know, 50 years ago you wouldn't have done, so that's good as well. So, again, for anyone good at maths, what that means is that BI children only account for 1.25% of the entire UK BI population, and that's not very much. So I've got another question for you now. This one's a bit harder, and I will come round to keep reminding you. I'm going to read out six different, if the scribes can write them down, six different disabilities, common disabilities of childhood, and I want you to put them in order of what you think are the most common to the least common. So we've got hearing problems, traumatic brain injury, usually when you've had a car crash or an accident. Have you got someone at the back who's come write it down?
Yes,
of course we have.
So you've got hearing problems, traumatic brain injury, visual problems. Multiple disabilities, the children who've got, you know, really multiple disabilities. Developmental delay, the children are delayed in their general development, they're a bit behind their friends. And children who are deaf-blind or multi-sensory impaired. No, multi-disabilities, they can also be in a wheelchair, they can have learning problems, they can have multiple deaf-blind. So what I'd like to do is to put those in order, what you think are the most common, what you think are the least common.
In children.
That was the most.
So we've got
I'm sorry, but with disability person there. Then I'll go for deaf blind.
Yeah.
So I want to read from that comment. I mean, traumatic. I was
so
confused.
Yes,
comments
first.
So we've got deaf blind.
Then I'll go for deaf, then blind, with impairment, apparent blind. And then traumatic brain injury, and then delay, I'll do that.
We've got
children
on its own as well.
Which ones have we got so far?
Yeah. I'll say deaf blind for a second.
Yeah, Denise.
Oh, that must be horrible for someone.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what they said at school because they mentioned it at school.
Maybe they were looking
at the more coming out to the advantage of the child.
Maybe we're looking at it from a really wrong angle. Maybe we should be looking at it from. I'll say with the disability first. I'll say deaf, then blind, then deaf blind. Hearing, visual, then hearing, visual.
They split into three groups at school, I think.
So how are we doing? Are we almost there? You're there? Are you there?
I'm also.
Yeah. I think it would be quite higher up.
I guess we're looking at for people who've got it severely, aren't we? Like, we're not looking at people like I know a few people have got multiple disabilities but still working on that. There's someone who I know has like multiple disabilities. I don't talk to her no more.
Oh right.
We used to be mates in college, or in school when I used to go to Thornton.
Oh yeah.
She couldn't speak, she couldn't like she was really and everything. But she was a damn good writer.
Yeah.
I organised a thing and I used her as a secretary.
Brilliant.
Like a little student council thing.
Yeah.
And I asked her to be secretary because her writing skills are second to none.
Does anyone need longer? Because we need to get on otherwise we're here doing. Okay, so what I'd like you to do is starting from Tracy's table, because they haven't started yet, is to just call out the order in which you've numbered them.
Okay, so the order we went with was multiple disability.
Sorry, is this from most common to
most
least
common? Most common to least common.
Yeah, most common to least common, okay.
So multiple developmental delays, visual, hearing, visual, deafblind, and then traumatic brain injury.
Okay, and then Denise, your table?
We've got developmental.
Is this again, is that the most common?
Yeah, most common. Developmental, hearing, multiple, visual, deafblind, and traumatic brain.
Can you say that again? You were very fast.
Okay, developmental, hearing, multiple, Visual.
Yeah.
Deafblind.
Yeah.
And a traumatic brain injury.
Brilliant, thank you. And the table at the back?
Visual problems one.
What is it, the most common?
Yeah.
Okay.
Head injuries the least sick.
No, it's all right, it's all right, don't worry. Okay.
Development delay with four, two.
Yeah.
Hearing problems four.
Five,
I'm going to get to that. Deafblind five and multiple disability three.
Head injury six.
Head injury. And then getting to a head injury six.
Right, how I'm going to mark that is anybody's guess, but I'll do my best. But actually, this is actually the answer. In order of most common, the most common disability is actually children who have multiple disabilities, which you've got between, you've got one from first place, third and third, but actually they are the most common disability. So I think actually, the second most common problem is hearing problems. There are way more children with sight loss, but if you go into a school, for every one visually impaired child, there'll be at least 5 to 10 blind, deaf children. The next most common thing is what they call developmental delay, where children are delayed in their learning for all sorts of reasons. That's followed by traumatic brain injury, where children have been in accidents. The fifth most common, the second least common, is visual problems. And the least common disability of childhood is children who are deaf-blind. And what's really interesting about that is at the bottom of that pile is blind and deaf-blind. They are always at the bottom of the pile. And the reason that I asked, I'll do the marking of that afterwards, because actually you all got deaf-blind at the same point, which was actually not terribly common, but visual problems, I'm going to have to do a little bit of working out who's got the most on that one. But I think what I was trying to get you to see is that visually impaired children are in what I call a double minority. They're in a minority in the sight loss world. They only make up 1.25%, 1.25% of the entire country's people with sight loss are under 25. It's terribly, terribly rare. And they're also in the minority in the world of childhood disability. And it's also worth pointing out that at least a third of the children who are blind and deafblind have additional needs as well. They're blind and in a wheelchair, they're blind and have autism, they're blind and have something else. And the problem is with services for these children, that even when you try to access a service which is for disabled people, so for instance, my daughter was a very good swimmer, and we joined Disability Sports England, they would send us all the programmes and stuff for the swimming, the timetables, they would come in PDF files, which we couldn't possibly adapt for her. And I would say, well, I need this in a Word copy to make it accessible for them. They'd say, well, why? And I'd say, because she can't see it. And they were like, oh, goodness. And it was really apparent when we went to swimming meetings that there were only a tiny handful of visually impaired swimmers compared to the other disabilities. She's also a really competent gymnast, and she's actually the only UK disabled gymnast with sight loss.
Do you think she'll take part in the Paralympics?
She doesn't. She's very tiny, so she stopped swimming at about 15 because she was just outgrown by the other swimmers. She's not really built as a swimmer. She's a wee little thing. But she is on the Great Britain Disability Gymnastics squad, which we're very proud of.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. What a lovely thing to say. I'm very proud of her as well. She is the only one with sight loss. But everywhere you go, the services for children are really, really poor, actually. And it has a really serious impact on all aspects of their lives. First of all, there's social isolation. You will undoubtedly be the only person in your village or small town that has a child with sight loss. We certainly were and are. And we've done that by mapping. We've mapped our membership. I should say, the charity I run, All Vision, covers the whole of Devon, but we also have a few families just outside Devon. We've mapped everything. We've got a lovely tactile map in our office with the borders of Devon are marked with tactile art, and the families are all marked with a little tactile spot. And you can see there's one in that town, one in that town, one in that town. They're really, really isolated. Inability to access activities, arts, events, sports, etc. It's a challenge enough for VI adults to access these kinds of activities. But with common, it's really common that actually event providers haven't even thought about having a visually impaired child. So it took us 3 swimming pools before we could get someone for our daughter to train. It took 2 gymnastics clubs, but we're not having her, she's a liability. They they're regretting it now because she's on the GBT.
What you should have asked was, are you there with, are you there with the Disability Discrimination Act?
I did, and you know, but because I was doing that at the school at such a high level, you get to the point where you only have so much energy for so many battles. And we were reserving our battles for healthcare and education. And we just thought, you know, it's easier just to go to another gym club. And the other gym club had the honour of having a GB gymnast on their squad. So, education, I think education is the area where we hear the gravest concerns from parents. There seems to be poor understanding of and provision for the needs of BI children in mainstream education. There's a huge debate about mainstream versus special education. And obviously for some children who are visually impaired and have very severe additional complex needs, special education places like West are perfect because they have really complex needs. But most other younger children are invariably on their own in mainstream schools which have never taught a BI child before, ever. Even with inputs, financial and practical from the local authority, education for most BI children is a complete postcode lottery of hits and sadly mostly miss. My own daughter did really well at primary school, secondary school, I can only describe as a complete blood bath. Of us battling to have her needs met and her sinking lower and lower in terms of her confidence, her happiness, her academic achievements. And we actually ended up taking the school to court.
No.
Yes, we actually ended up taking the school to court.
Did you win?
Yes.
Good.
Which was considering they had a whole team of solicitors and a lawyer from a top London barrister, and we had me, and I am just mum, I don't have any legal background. Was quite a thing. But actually, we're certainly by no means the only parents who've made really hard decisions to send our children hundreds of miles away. We've got children in the New College Worcester. We've got quite a few of them now at RNC. My daughter's actually now bought at the Royal National College for the Blind up in Hereford, where she's achieving A grades and everything and doing superbly well and is happy for the first time in her life, properly happy. But it's hard. I miss her dreadfully. It's like having a big hole in my heart where she's not here.
And did she do it at senior school in the end and she got her
diploma? She did, well, fortunately the court case went through when she was in year 10, so she then got everything she needed for her exams and she did very well, but partly because I'm a very adept transcriber and I'm transcribing her work for her.
Which school did it
say? I'm not going to say.
Does the daycare centre for visually impaired and deafblind for parents that are working through like day centres and things like that. Has that improved? Because when I was young, that was basically chucked into mainstream day centres as the only visually impaired person around. It was quite traumatic, quite hard.
I wouldn't say it's improved. No,
there's
I think
real facilities at all.
No, I wouldn't say it's improved particularly. No,
I'm afraid. So I would also like to comment.
Yeah.
Like on the social structure of things as well, because it's not just about it's okay. It's also about the social structure as well, and that also kind of what's where when you've been brought up as well, because like some visually impaired people, and they can go into a mainstream school, and it doesn't matter what they do in there. Like they can probably weather the storm and all that, but some people can just go in there, and it's completely utter like you know what you just described already.
Yeah.
So you know it's a hit or miss situation. Like.
Absolutely.
It also depends on, you know, what part, how much they know as well.
Yeah, and so. I think also, you know, it's just silly things like my daughter would say, you know, there was someone meant to take her laptop from lesson to lesson so she could walk with her friends from lesson to lesson, but they never turned up. So by the time she'd packed up her laptop, she can't see more than about 6 foot, and then that's it. She's lost all her friends, so of course her social life dwindled to nothing. And that has a massive impact on a young person. I've got 5 minutes, so I'm going to crack on. Habilitation and mobility, again, that has been a dreadful postcode lottery of support. We have virtually none. It is now included on what they call the Special Educational Needs Code of Practice, so we're hoping it will improve. And healthcare, it's not uncommon for children to have to travel really regularly to Great Ormond Street and Warfield in London to have their healthcare needs met. We certainly do, because there aren't the specialisms locally to have their needs met. So, just really briefly, what do we do as More Vision? We obviously can't solve all of these problems. We can't solve education, we can't solve mobility and habilitation, but this is what we do. We inform our families and we keep them really up to date on their rights within education, social care, healthcare, and benefits. We've got a website, we've got a Facebook page, we have a newsletter, and with direct contacts with families. So if someone is having trouble with education, we can tell them what the right thing is, what they should be doing, what they should do, what the child deserves, and where to go to get that. Support. We support families in accessing key services. We signpost them to places like Quids for Kids, which is for benefits. The Royal Blind Children's Society have like face-to-face advocacy. The local education advice service. And most importantly, we put families in touch with other families who are in the same position. That's often more valuable than professional services. Reducing isolation. We offer events and residentials at least once a month to bring our families together so they can spend time with each other. And this is so important for the visually impaired children, some of whom have never met another visually impaired child outside of all vision. I know my daughter. And the reason I started this group, this is the last page, the reason I started this group is because when my daughter got to 7, we'd just come back from the hospital and they told her she was never going to drive. And she said to me, "Mummy, I've never met another little girl with poorly eyes before." Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, no, you probably haven't, have you really? And that's what made me start the group. It's a chance for the parents to meet each other, and the parents can share news and information and ideas and all sorts of things. And also for the siblings, who we value as highly as the children. It's really important. Siblings get a chance to let off a bit of steam and be with other kids. We try to make our activities as diverse as possible. It's not very easy because we're covering from 0 to 25, a range of sight loss from mild sight loss to fully blind, and a range of additional needs from minor to very complex, and families who live the length and breadth of Devon, Cornwall, Devon, and Somerset. So, and we also have to consider cost implications. We subsidise all our trips by 75%, so if it's going to cost £10 a person for a particular event, we'll ask for £2.50. So, you know, a family of four can come to an event for a tenner, which is fairly good. So, I was going to do more about activities, but I know I've got to wind up now.
It's all right, Laura, go on. It's fine.
Sure?
Yeah, go on.
It's one more, like, quick? No,
yeah, no, that's fine.
Sure.
Yeah.
So it's back to you. This is the last activity, which you've had a bit of a break now as we're talking, so it's time for a night long of work. We think we've done pretty well every activity there is to do in Devon over the last 10 years. You name it, we've done it. But I bet we've forgotten one or two. And what I'd like you to do in your groups is to make a list of, say, 5 activities that you would have liked to have done as a VI child. And there'll be a point for everyone that's mentioned. Everyone that's mentioned that we haven't done. Do you need something?
Is this if we had to?
If you were a VI child, or if you become blind later on, what activity, but list your top 5 activities that you would have liked to have done that you might not have been able to do, you know, in a standard environment, that you would have liked to have done. And if we've not done any of them, I will A, eat my hat, and B, you'll get a point. And that will be the last activity we do. Can we start? So, hello, everybody. Is everybody anxious? It's very useful. Thank you. Someone's got a really loud shush, which is great, because it's really good, because I'm not good at shushing. So, if we can start with the table at the back, so I know you've got your 5, and you'll get a point. So, you're back right, you'll get a point for every activity that you've named we haven't done.
Right, well, the number one is, we just say go away.
Go away?
Yeah.
Yeah, well done, haven't done that one.
Number 2 is carriage driving.
No, haven't done that one.
Number 3 is sledging.
No, we haven't done that one.
Number 4 is jet skiing.
Whoa.
No, we haven't done that one.
Christine would like to go go karting.
Whoa. That is amazing. Can I just say, is all this being recorded?
Yeah.
Yes.
It is.
I will take these ideas away, and they will all be put into place. So that is, I think we've done it all, but that is fantastic. Right, so, Denise's table. Shush, please. Martial arts, yeah, we haven't done martial arts.
Go-karting.
Another go-karting, yes.
Skiing, but on snow.
Yeah, oh, skiing on snow. And where would you like us to go skiing on snow?
Or...
okay.
Lord of the Dark Lord.
Right, okay, Tracy.
Yeah. Well, I want to start with Disneyland.
Florida. Florida.
A Braille Games Day.
Yeah.
A skydive.
Yeah.
A driving experience.
That's on the cards for this year, but yeah. Well done.
What should we say? Creating a pen friend scheme for Braille or audio users.
A guide dog meet and greet.
And we also said SigWire.
SigWire we have done. Do you know something? We've done so much. We've done horse riding, we've done surfing, we've done all the local parks, we've done tricep skiing, we've done cycling, we've done zipwiring, abseiling, crate stacking. We've done so much. And you guys
have you ever introduced them to karaoke maybe? I do karaoke.
We have done karaoke, yeah. But you guys have come up with more ideas. You've come up with that space. We've got another 2 years until we've booked in already. So thank you. You've just done my job for me. I only work 2 days a week in this job, and it's not much time. So I'm going to just wrap up now. First of all, well done. That was absolutely wonderful and so much help to me. I will say that all of our trips have been really well attended and a huge success. I've given talks to like other groups, like major national groups, and they say, how come your engagement rate is so high? You get between 50 and 100 people on most of our activities. And I say, well, because we treat the family as a family. We don't spit off the visually impaired child. We do sometimes feel like we have an over 13 or an over 16 event, where we do most of the time. You come as a family. What do? If you have to drive 50 miles to drop your child off an activity, what do you do then with your younger one while they're there and you've got 2 hours to wait? It's impossible. So we do treat our families as families. I think our most adventurous thing was windsurfing at Bantam Beach on what was definitely the windiest day of the year. I was terrified. And finally, the last thing is people have asked me why I do this. My goal for my daughter, and I'm sure this goes for anyone who's got children, my goal for my daughter was that she would have a decent education, friends, and the chance to take part in any activity she wished to do. That she would become fully independent, employed, and have a secure and happy future. And I would imagine that that's what most parents wish for their children, sighted or blind. I wish the same for both my children. My daughter's actually currently applying to Oxford to study medicine. My sighted son's going to be a rock star. our aims in More Vision are to ensure that our children achieve as many of these goals as possible. Not all of them are achievable for all of our children, but we wish to see every child reach their full potential, whatever that is. I just wish we could have been around for all of you, where you lived, when you were younger. And that's what I do in 2 days a week. So thank you, everybody.
You can contact us by emailing podcast@vitalk.co.uk, on Facebook by searching for VI Talk, on Twitter @VITalkPodcast, and our website address is www.vitalk.co.uk.